That's the thing I love about working on murals. I had a little structure idea, but as I get into this flow, it's almost like the artwork and I work together to create something that couldn't have happened if I tried to control it or demand this is the way it is.
Welcome to Created Creative. I'm Dawn.
And I'm Ruth. And here we are. It's a beautiful day here in Minnesota. I just got back from yoga and everyone was cheerful. And it's so fun when everyone's in a good mood and they're happy to see you.
You've talked about yoga is a community.
Yeah, they're a great community. Yeah.
The reason I ask is that I've been listening to a lot of podcasts with Marissa Franco. She wrote this book, Platonic, and apparently people who have a larger social network reduce their risk of death by 45%, and exercise only does like 24%. Like, it's way more powerful. And yet we arrange our society around romantic love. So she presents this question, what if we arranged society around our friends?
Oh, I love that. I'm looking forward to someday I want to have the Golden Girls house, you know,
where they were like 54.
Yeah, exactly. So right now I could have my Golden Girls house. You could come live here. If you wanted to come back to Minnesota, Don, you come live in my house.
Thank you. How are the schools?
Actually, the schools are really good.
The Golden Girls are a great example because in the book Platonic, she's talking about how we need to have a small group of people for whom we go the extra mile just as much as we would for a partner.
You know, I've always thought, wouldn't it be great if all of my favorite people lived like on the same block? We could all just see each other whenever and help each other and share tools and all the things.
And there's so much data that so many people are lonely. I'm just like looking at all these studies lately. We spend one third the amount of time we did with our friends 10 years ago. 10.
Isn't that sad? So this has been your topic of interest lately.
It is a topic of interest. And also I'm very aware of how I'm building community because I have a child now, but I've always been somebody who's like wanting to define a group, not in terms of keeping people out, but just saying, we're going to count on each other. I had a little group in seminary. I had a little group after seminary in my neighborhood. And I have a weekly dinner party now. I'm always about knowing the net is wider.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
And now I'm thinking about it more globally as I revise this book.
Well, and you're very active in your church currently. I know that that's another place.
Mm-hmm. Seriously? I know we don't have a marketing department of major mainline denominations, but mainline Protestants could totally advertise. Come here to make friends. Don't be lonely. This is a community that will support you.
Yeah.
I know in my church, no matter what would happen to me, someone would know what to do. Like, there's a lawyer, there are doctors, there's a contractor, and they actually would help me.
Yes, and every church I've been a part of is that way. I mean, maybe one of the biggest reasons people go there is because of that community and that sense of belonging. And this is the part I always loved when my boys have been growing up, is that it's one of the few truly intergenerational places. And they've always been comfortable around people of all ages because of that. So there is something there. I agree with you. Probably a marketing opportunity that we could be making better use of, but I'm not sure the best way to get the word out that it can be a
somebody
wonderful
knows.
Community.
There's a Lutheran, Episcopal, Presbyterian, Methodist PR agency somewhere in this world.
Right.
Who knows what to do.
It is a whole thing, isn't it? I mean, the importance of creating community and where we find that is a beautiful thing.
So our person today left his community.
Yeah, so that was a good tie-in. What a fascinating person Trey Everett is, isn't he?
Another adult beginner.
Mm-hmm. I was thinking about that. There's no time to start diving into it like the present, and you never know where it's going to take you. I mean, it's taken Trey down all sorts of fascinating avenues.
In whatever setting.
Yeah. He's just this kind of person who's very open to wherever his talents are needed and in different means through the cards that he makes and the large scale murals, but then also spiritually, the different things he offers, he's very open to sharing as well.
So here's Trey.
Here's Trey.
Yay.
Yes. Enjoy. Trey, thank you so much for being with us today. How are you?
Yeah, I'm doing great. Thanks for inviting me to be here with both of you. This is fun.
Yeah, Trey, I've known you for quite a few years now, and Dawn is just meeting you today. And maybe some of our listeners have never met you either. And so would you mind sharing with us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, sure. I am an artist and I do some pastoral spiritual work with the Northwest Minnesota Arts Council with a variety of areas, but one main area is with their gallery in Thief River Falls. I help curate that. And I live in Crookston, Minnesota with Kareen, my wife, and our youngest child, Jack. And we have two adult daughters who live in the Twin Cities.
Yes. And you are quite an artist. You do art of all different kinds. And at least lately, you've done quite a few large scale art things, right?
Yeah, I have. I was primarily working with pen and ink on artwork on 8.5 by 11 or just small pieces of paper you can fit on your desk. But the last few years, I've been creating a number of indoor and outdoor murals and some fairly large. So that has been a learning curve and it's been a lot of fun.
They're really beautiful. It's fun to see the pictures of all the different things that you're up to. What has been one of your most enjoyable creative experiences?
Probably a couple of years ago, I worked on a mural in downtown Crookston, and it's huge on the side of a building. And that was probably one of the most challenging and fun creative experiences just because of the sheer size of the mural. The building was 80 feet long and 30 some feet high, and I had to use a lift to get up to the top. And it was just a lot of trying to figure out how do I get this image on a piece of paper up on this huge canvas. And also, murals are totally different from working in a studio because in my studio, which is just my living room, the temperature is perfect, the lighting is perfect. If I'm hungry, I just a few feet to the kitchen. Nobody's bothering me. I know what I'm working on. It's a piece of paper that's always the same. All my tools are there. But out when you're working on a mural, especially an outdoor mural, it can be brutally hot. It can be windy. A few weeks ago, I was working on a mural inside of our local homeless shelter, and it was so cold in this entryway that we had to have little heaters, and it was still too cold for the paint. It wouldn't dry properly. And you never know, the canvas, when you're working on a mural, it can be smooth, it can be rough brick, and you're working way up in the air. Sometimes I'm scared of heights, so that's a challenge. And sometimes I'm lying on my side in the grass. So it's very challenging figuring out how to solve problems. Like, how can I work through this? What should I do here? There's a window here I didn't realize, or there's a big crack in the building, or it's too hot at 1 o'clock. I have to stop. How do I finish in time? So that's a lot of creativity that I enjoy.
I'm curious with the mural projects, do a lot of people stop to talk to you when you're working on things like
that? Yeah, they do. A lot of people stop, and I just prepare myself that this is going to happen and just plan a buffer for that to happen because I want to be pleasant and kind, and people are genuinely curious. And so I'll stop and talk, especially in schools. I just completed a mural a week ago at our elementary school. And so all through the day, kids are walking down the hallway and stopping and asking me questions. And so I just prepare myself to sometimes paint and talk at the same time, sometimes just to put my brush down. But yeah, that is a feature of murals.
And with the big mural that you did in downtown Crookston, were you commissioned to do that, or did you submit a proposal to do that?
Or just paint a building randomly?
Yeah, I just snuck in at night and started painting. No, I talked to the, it was on the side of a hardware store in downtown Crookston. I was in the store one day and the owner said, "Hey, are you interested in painting something on the side of my building? I sure would like something." And I said, "Sure, that would be great." But he didn't have money. So we wrote a grant and we got it. We got the grant.
Yeah.
And so that's how that was able to happen. The grant money went for my time, but also to all the paint and the brushes and renting the lift and just all these odds and ends.
Oh, that's so fun. Love that.
How are you different than Leonardo da Vinci? He painted The Last Supper and it's still on a wall. It feels like you're the same as him.
Oh, that's a great compliment. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Having not seen the mural, I'm assuming you're the exact
right.
same.
Yeah. I don't know why I'm not world famous now. It's so weird.
Even Jesus's feet are missing in there because they cut a hole into the kitchen from the dining room. Like all that stuff sounds similar to your description.
Right. Yeah. It's just with Leonardo, he was on his back and he was getting pain in his eyes and his mouth.
Yes. In the Sistine
yeah.
Chapel.
Yeah. And it's very challenging. Leonardo's Leonardo. I'm not great at photorealistic images.
We have photos now. We don't need that.
So mine are more symbolic. So this mural I did at the elementary school last week, the principal said, I was thinking maybe our mascot is the pirates. How about little pirates for, you know, first graders walking down the hall?
Yeah.
And I said, okay. So I was thinking about little kids dressed up like pirates. And I thought, I'm not good at painting human faces. So I decided to do pirate animals. So I did a fish and a cat. And so that worked out well for me.
So fun. I know also that you do so many things, but one of the things that you have shared with Consecrate a few times are different reflection decks that you have made. And there's one coming up soon that you're sharing with us about discernment. Could you tell us a little bit about those projects?
Yeah, definitely. So these are projects a colleague and I work on together, Teresa Blythe. She's a spiritual director, Phoenix, Arizona. We've known each other for a number of years and have collaborated off and on. And so we decided to work on some discernment style cards. And so these are different sizes. I'm looking at them now, like a 4x6 size card, like a giant playing card. So we come up with a theme. One of our themes was mystics and saints. And so we started with some desert mothers and fathers, Abbas and Amas. We came up with 10 of the desert mothers and fathers. And Teresa did the research and wrote about each of them, which is on one side of the card, along with some questions to ponder. And then I drew some images for the other side of the card. The images are black and white, and you can color them, which is another contemplative practice. And so then we decided to do a second grouping, numbers 11 through 20, which mystics and saints, and these are, we call the all-stars. So it's like Julian of Norwich and Rumi and Jeef and Marjorie Kemp and some others. And it, with the same process, Teresa writes on one side of the card and then I draw the image. And so, yeah, we've done a number of these sets. Like you just mentioned, Ruth, our most recent set is a very tiny little deck, 2x3 inches, a normal playing card size. And these are discernment cards, and there's 14 of them. And Teresa wrote about discernment on one side, and I drew images to go along with them. And they're great. They're a lot of fun. And I just actually picked up yours yesterday, Ruth, and my daughter and I packaged them last night, and we'll finish the rest in the next day or two, and then I'll send them to you.
Ooh, yay.
Preview. So cool. Sneak peek.
They're so cool because they take you from the beginning of the discernment process all the way through and ask you these wonderful questions. I'm a huge fan. They're really beautiful.
Oh, good. I'm glad you like them. Yeah, I think they're great. I'm biased, of course, but Teresa, she's been working with discernment for years, and her wisdom and then some of my creativity, and it makes a really wonderful little set of cards.
What is a discernment image?
That's a good question. Yeah. So for example, let's see, I often decide on a theme of drawing or art that is cohesive. So I decided I would use lino cut, which are these rubber stamps. And then you get a carving tool and you carve around and then you put ink on it and press it on a piece of paper. So it's a very specific look. And then I decided all of the images would be from 15th century alchemical drawings and or prints that I have in a book. And so the first question is, discernment hinges on a concrete life question. And then after that little statement, Teresa wrote a number of things to think about. So I look through this book and I think, okay, what would be a good image that goes along with thinking about a particular question. And so I find this image, a little person that has their profile of their head, and inside their head is an eyeball. And I thought, okay, there we go, I'll use that. And so I did that. And another one was, pay attention to your deepest feelings. And so I looked through this book and I found this image of a skeleton holding a raven. And so I thought, okay, that goes along with consolation and desolation, these different feelings that went inside of us. And so I used that. So yeah, it was quite a process of thinking and going through and, oh, I like this. No, I don't like that. And then a lot of art is, this makes sense to me, or this is what I'm thinking. And somebody else looks at it and they agree, but they get something totally different out of it. And so that's the beautiful thing in art.
Thank you. I like hearing your process.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, that's so interesting. And you do have a very unique style. Like, I've seen quite a bit of your pen and ink things over time now, and it's all has like a certain feeling to it, like a certain vibe to it. I like
it. Oh, good. Yeah. And I like changing it up as much as I can. I'm always learning different styles and a different process. So I like that part of the process.
So how about when you are working on something at home, do you need a certain setting for how you go about your process? Do you like to listen to music? Do you like it quiet? A certain time of day?
I need to have my space set up, which is my desk, which can raise and lower. If I get tired of sitting, I can stand. And I like to have a lot of time cleared out so I'm not rushed and I can think through what I'm doing and try not to have a lot of interruptions. And often light a candle. I'll have my teapot next to me. I drink a lot of green tea and often play music. I listen to a lot of classic rock. And then if I'm really needing to concentrate, I'll listen to jazz or something like that. But with creativity, it doesn't really matter the time of day. I mean, I don't work at night very much, but it's mostly if I have a project, that's what gets me going. So I can tap into creativity almost any time, it seems, if I've got a project. If I don't have any kind of project going, I'm just not doing a whole lot. And so sometimes I give myself some kind of project, and then the creative juices start going.
Okay. And who are some of your favorite creators?
For pen and ink, I really like Gustave Doré, who's an ancient, not ancient, but just an older style pen and ink artist. I've got some of his books that I'll just thumb through for inspiration. There's a modern man named Richie Beckett who does a lot of awesome pen and ink work that I'll just stare at and admire and get ideas. One of my biggest inspirations are gig posters, music posters. They are amazingly creative. And so I've got a few books that just have all kinds of gig posters. I've got one now I'm looking through, you know, like the Decemberists and Wilco and just all of these different bands a lot of people have heard of. And when they come to a city to play, they'll have an artist create these posters to advertise. And they're just amazingly creative. And so I'll just spend time thumbing through these books and it just stirs ideas. Oh, I could do this, or I could add this over here, or look how they worked with these colors. I could try something. So that really gets the creative juices flowing.
So how did you start? Did this start when you were just a little kid, just scribbling on your notebook?
I've always been interested in art and drew when I was a kid. My dad did some artwork and distant relatives were artists or did art in their spare time. And so part of it's just in my blood that I enjoy drawing and being creative. And so I did that a lot as a kid. And then when I got a little older, that just fell away. You know, other things were more important, like cars and girls and just different hobbies. And I didn't do much for years. When I moved up to Crookston, I was in a meeting just drawing and doodling. And this person said to me, I see you like to doodle. And I said, yeah. And he said, why don't you do that more? And that was the first time I really thought about why don't I? I was in my 40s then, and I hadn't used artwork. I hadn't done hardly anything all those years. Huh. And so I just thought, yeah, why don't I do it more? So I actually just began drawing in my journal, drawing little images and spending more time doing what I loved. And as time went on, it just blossomed and opportunities arose and people began liking what I was doing. And then this happened and that happened. And yeah, it's just amazing when you look back on it and see where I am now and how much of my life revolves around artwork and creativity. Yeah, so it's this following what gives you life.
I'm also fascinated. Who was that person that asked you why you don't do it more? They have a gift to the world making you do this again.
One of my coworkers when I worked at MICA, the Minnesota Institute of Contemplation and Healing. And so we had moved up here to work with MICA. Yeah. And so that was at a MICA meeting. And it was this revelation. It was a really powerful experience.
So whenever we see someone doing something, we need to encourage them in case we're the ones who are going to tip it over. Give people the idea again.
Yeah, I think it was Carl Jung who said, remember what you did as a child that made the hours fly by. And that's the key. When we notice, what do you really love doing? And encourage people to do that more.
I had no idea that it had been so long that art wasn't a big part of your life because it's so central to who I know you to be that it's crazy that it was so long that it really wasn't part of your journey.
Yeah, it is actually bizarre. People will actually say to me, like when we moved up to Crookston in 2006, my job before that, I was a pastor in Missouri. And I've had parishioners from that church email me or send me a message on Facebook and say, I don't remember you really being interested in art back then. And my answer is, yeah, I kind of was, but I didn't use it or explore it. And so it is a strange thing. It's like a second life for me in some ways.
You really live what you teach and share, because it was really through you and through MICA that even the whole idea of following what is life-giving, even that I ever heard that. And that's become so central and life-saving to me, to think that you can actually do the things that you feel called to do and not just what you feel like you should be doing. So it's cool to know that you live that in your own journey with following the art and seeing where that has taken you.
Yeah. When you say it out loud, of course, that makes sense. But it's something we as humans often aren't aware of or don't participate in what is life giving to us. Or we think, oh, that's not that important. I love, you know, whatever. I love gardening. How can I make a profession doing that? I've got to do all these other things. And we don't have to figure out how to make a living or six figures from gardening. But what would happen if we made that more of a priority somehow? And that's what I did with my art. I don't know what I can do with these little images I'm drawing, but what if I just do it more?
But then the hardware store owner knew what you could do with these images. Yeah. And the spiritual director in Phoenix or all these other people once they saw it.
Right. Yeah.
The Holy Spirit spoke through them and was like, here's what you can do.
Yeah.
But people needed to know you do it.
Yeah, exactly.
I love it. It's very communal.
Yes.
Very much. This might be a good place to ask you, how do you see your creativity and spirituality connect?
Well, I think for me, spirituality and creativity are two sides of the same coin. I grew up in a Christian church in Missouri, and I was trained at a little Bible college in Missouri and then seminary, and it was a fundamentalist Christian group is what it was. And so I had learned that spirituality is about knowing the right answers and having everything contained in a certain boundary. And it had to do with your mind, mostly beliefs, theologies, knowing who's in and who's out and all of that. But from what I see, spirituality is not like that at all. Spirituality is wide open borders and no control and letting go and not knowing and not so much in your mind, but more embodied. And that is what creativity is. It's not this controlled knowing way of doing something. It's this letting go and having some ideas, but trusting the creative process and see what happens in the process. And that's the thing I love about working on murals. I have a little structure idea, but as I'm working, I just get into this flow and, oh, I think this would look good. And I move here and then I move there. And it's almost like the artwork and I joined together and worked together to create something that couldn't have happened if I tried to control it or demand this is the way it is. So yes, I see spirituality and creativity, this way to really get out of our egos and be much more open and free and not focused on perfection. And we embody it and we have fun and we get into this, like I said, this flow. One of my favorite poems is by Rilke, which says something like, "May my life be like a river, never forcing and never holding back the way it is with children." And I like that. It's like you can get into this flow and spirituality and creativity. You're not forcing something to happen. You're not stopping something. You're just in that moment. And it's powerful.
It is. I have to say, I love how wide open your spirituality is. And Trey is a guy, you'll see him leading a session at a Lutheran Synod conference meeting. And then the next time you see him, he's doing a tarot card reading for someone. And I think it's really beautiful.
There's wisdom in so many places.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
This seems to be very far away from your Bible college or seminary. Was that a slow crumbling or how does one get from there to tarot cards?
That's a great question because I'm definitely going to hell from my Bible college.
According to them.
Yeah.
That the Lutherans will take you though. You're
right.
Fine.
Yeah. Well, good, good. Yeah. Well, yeah, it was a slow process. It was just starting to question, why would God create this eternal torture chamber where people are slowly roasted? You know, I just started thinking about things like that. And then I started meeting people who are amazing people. And it's like, oh, they don't consider themselves a Christian. Or it really, it started with, I grew up thinking everybody, but mostly everybody but our group would go to hell, Baptist, Presbyterians, definitely Lutherans. We're going to burn forever. And so then I would meet these people, these Baptists, Presbyterians, and Lutherans.
Yeah.
And it's like, wow, these are awesome people. I remember I was in a little summer training program to go to China to teach English.
Oh, I did that too.
Oh,
I love
cool.
it.
Where were you at in China?
Xi'an.
Okay, cool.
It's where the Terracotta Warriors are.
Yeah, I visited there. That's very cool. Yeah, I remember I was in this training and I met all these other teachers who were definitely awesome people and knew their Bibles better than I did. They were from these other denominations. I remember calling my youth minister in a panic the night before we left. Like, how can all these people be going to hell? I just don't get it.
Mm.
And I can't remember what he said, but that was part of it. Just meeting people who were just wonderful people and just continuing to learn and study. And then I ran across contemplative spiritual practice and different practices and begin learning about it's not all about knowledge and finding right answers. And it was this slow process of many years, letting go of belief as much as possible and being our true selves, and that it's so much beyond anything we can imagine or figure out. And that's okay. That's good.
Thank you for sharing that. You've creatively rethought assumptions you grew up with. People who create their life are very impressive to me.
Yeah.
Yeah. So one part of what we usually offer in podcast is because Dawn has been a coach for a very long time and she's a brilliant coach.
Oh.
And so I'm wondering if you're thinking about something that maybe you'd like to run by Dawn, if you're thinking about the next steps for something.
Yeah, sure. So I do spiritual direction. A few clients I work with. And I started a new little thing where after the session, I'll draw a little image on like a 3x5 index card of maybe one of the things we talked about, and then I'll mail it to the directee. So I love doing that. And so it's maybe a two-pronged question. I'd love to figure out how to have more spiritual direction clients. I just love it. I'd love to do it more. And I don't know how to do that. And the second question is, I'd love to make art or creativity part of the spiritual direction process. And I'm not sure what that may look like other than what I've started doing with those little 3x5 index cards.
So you want more clients And I have never heard of a spiritual director sending a drawing afterward. I feel like that is easily marketable. Do people know you do that?
Just my client.
And I need to speak as one of his spiritual directees, because you just started doing this like the last couple times. And the first time you sent it, I had no idea it was coming and it arrived, but it brought me to tears because it was beautiful. This little piece of art that reflected a piece of what we had talked about, and also that you took the time to do that. And so there's so many layers of it that are beautiful.
Yeah, thanks for saying that.
So can we have Ruth and others put that in writing with a picture of the card?
That would be great.
And how do you communicate with the masses? Where do you have access to potential new clients?
I'm really terrible at marketing myself. I try to post on Instagram a lot.
Great.
Then on Facebook. And I've got a website.
Those are great.
And that's it.
Instagram would lend itself well to these cards, because then it's a picture and the caption is Ruth, whatever she just said. I have it recorded so we could get it word for word. Things like that, then at the end, you're saying, if this interests you, direct message me.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So there has to be the app. What else are you posting? Are they images? Are they pictures of the murals? What's happening on Instagram?
Yes, mostly my artwork and any kind of spiritual projects that I'm involved in. I was just working with the church on a discernment retreat a few weeks ago. So that on Instagram, say, this is what I did. And yeah.
Yep. So about every fifth time you want to have an ask.
Okay.
So you mostly give a lot of content like that retreat. It could be five posts, right? It could be, we talked about this. Have you ever thought about it? This is something else that we discussed. Look at this beautiful picture that we created at the thing. I hope you enjoy it. So you're creating value for the people following you four times. And on the fifth one, I did this for this church. If you're the leader of a church, I'd love to do it for your church. Direct message me.
Okay.
So you've told the story, and I feel like the way you talk about making the mural, you'll be good at this, about crafting the story, because marketing is just storytelling. Everyone thinks they hate marketing because they're like, I can't sell myself. And it's all this ickiness, like used car salesman vibe.
Right.
But marketing can be this joyful storytelling where someone else sees themselves in the story and was like, how do I do this? I want this.
Trey, have you done the thing where you film yourself drawing something, and it could be really cool seeing you draw one of those things? Just in the process, and then you could even put on what you're making and why you do it. I can picture the reel right now.
Oh, yeah. I think that's a great idea. Would it be, I'm just thinking of the sharing something that's private that I'm sending to a client. But I guess if I don't say the person's name, which I wouldn't.
Or really what it's about, right?
Say, here, this is this little image I just drew for a spiritual direction client, which I do after every session. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah.
Alone. I am so impressed by that. There are people who want that. Because then what did you do with your card, Ruth? Where is it now?
Oh my gosh, it sits right here on my desk.
Yeah.
So I can see it all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the spiritual direction session lasts longer because you had time to forget, and then you get this surprise thing in the mail, and then you're reminded of the session, and now the card is there to keep reminding you. It's like your sessions are more powerful than other people's sessions because of this visual.
I love it. I'm just in awe.
Great.
Yeah, this is really good.
What part of it feels like the first step?
I think I could go back and do maybe another post about that church discernment.
Love it.
Yeah, I don't know if I've got enough material, like photos, to do three more posts. Because I don't want to just bore people either.
The thing about social media is they will just scroll by if it's not for them. You want people to unselect you just as much as you want people to select you.
That's good.
So you do what's true to you, and it will resonate with the right other humans.
I like that.
And a lot of people worry about posting too much or something, but so many people don't even see what we do. So I do think it's important to post a lot, because so much of the time people don't even see what we do post.
Look at Consecrate. There's a lot. Ruth is posting often, and it's wonderful.
I know. I was just thinking of that, how much you post, Ruth, and it is awesome, and it's really edgy, and I really like that. I guess that's the other thing. I don't always enjoy posting, but maybe I have to think through, okay, this is just part of the process. and I just need to make myself do it.
And or find the fun in it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it is nice when you use the planner feature, when you can do a bunch at once.
I don't even know what that is.
I just started using it in Facebook and it connects with my Instagram in the business suite. Do you use that, Dawn?
Yes, I have been more using an Instagram. So I'm just going the opposite direction of Ruth.
Okay.
Yeah, it sounds like exactly the same thing. So you could start from either place.
And you just make, so let's go the Instagram to Facebook route. You can make.
You make the thing.
Okay.
First, you make the post.
Okay.
And then you write the caption and all that, and then scroll down. Your last option is advanced settings. And then in there, there's the option to schedule it, I think in the next 30 days or something, and then click OK or whatever. Then you'll have this other tab that shows you scheduled posts.
Oh, okay. So you can make a few. If you're like, hey, I'm ready to work on this, you can make a few in
yes.
an afternoon.
Make a whole month in an hour. Okay. Yes. That will make it more fun maybe for you.
That's a great idea.
Well, gosh, I'm so glad that you could be with us today. And I love the work that you do. And it's both beautiful and it's meaningful. And I can't wait to see all that you are yet to create.
I'm so excited about this.
Thank you. Thank you both so much for having me on. I really appreciate it. It's been great.
Thank you for listening to Created Creative. Please take a moment to like, share, follow, review wherever you get your podcast. That really helps us reach more people.
And just to follow up, Trey, he did do his homework. He already posted on social media the video of him drawing the little icon for his spiritual directees. He's been posting more and it's exciting to see.
So I guess our tip for the day is whatever makes you unique, start putting it out there. Somebody's looking for it.
Go create something.
Go create something.